Blog Talk Radio.
He is the host with the most, and he's rocking coast to coast smooth. She is the lady with her hands.
Where in the hell did you get your news from?
Drama.
Together you got
smooth. Drama.
All right, welcome to Smooth Drama with your host, Dick Hugger, a.k.a. F the N-Word. And I am joined by my astonishing co-host, Miss 100%. She's back.
Yay!
And anyway, tonight we've got Fawn Davis, creator of Morav and special effects, creator extraordinaire. So, of course, as always, if you want to holler at us, 646-929-2037 is the call-in number. Once again, 646-929-2037 is the call-in number. Also, you know, me and Miss 100%, we're real sociable people. So, you want to hit us up on Facebook, Twitter, tag, whatnot. Miss 100%, you want to do the honors and tell the people where they can catch you at?
Sure, no problem. You can catch me at imnotonbs@yahoo.com. Just like Chris Brown say, don't you be on that bullshit. imnotonbs@yahoo.com.
All right. And if you want to catch up with me on Twitter, I'm Smooth Drama. You can follow me there. Everywhere else, Facebook, tag, my yearbook. I'm Dick Hugger. Follow me, add me. Of course, we'll follow and add you back. And you can also, you want to find out some more about Miss 100%, feel free to go to our Smooth Drama page and go to the About Us page, and you can find out all the little tidbits that you want to know about Miss 100%.
Yeah, maybe.
Well, what wasn't no maybe, I know it's been all over the news, the earthquake in Virginia. And crazy. I mean, the shockwaves were felt from Georgia to New England. And which begs me to ask the question, I mean, if they're having earthquakes in Virginia and back east, does that mean we're going to have, like, hurricanes on the West Coast?
Yeah, what's going on with that?
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, we know scientists, supposedly, you know, that the whole global warming and how the weather would change, whatnot, and things would be different. Ah, earthquakes, which don't normally happen back east. I'm like,
and one on that scale, an earthquake of that scale.
Right.
Yeah, pretty scary.
I mean, it was a couple of them. The aftershocks were crazy. I mean, it's a 5.8 magnitude earthquake with aftershocks of 2.8, 2.2, and then followed by 4.2 later on. I'm like, you know, it's like it just keeps on coming. And that's why I say, I mean, if that's happening back east, I'm scared to think what happened out here on the West Coast. I mean, I moved away from the South, so I wouldn't have to worry about hurricanes no more. But
but this summer has just been plagued with all kinds of natural disasters. When it started out where I am first, with all the tornadoes and everything, and
right.
Then you have, yeah. So this summer has been really crazy as far as the weather.
Right, and that's what I'm talking about. The crazy is happening, and it's not cool at all. And speaking of the crazy stuff that's happening, I don't know if you're aware, but for the rest of the nation, although it was national news, and two idiots shot themselves was shot at each other. Well, two people were shot in the parking lot after the 49ers and Raiders game. Now, some folks would say, well, yeah, it's a Raider game, whatnot, but still, I mean, there is one thing to say, okay, the people are crazy and they're crazy for their team. But it's another to be like, no. And I guess here's where we do the role play, Miss 100%.
Okay.
I play 49ers fan. You play Raider fan or vice versa, whichever one you want.
I wanted to say fuck the 49ers because Raider fan, but we can do it however you want to do it.
Well, the Raiders suck.
Yeah, but the 49ers suck a bigger one.
No, the Raiders suck a bigger one.
Hey, stay right there. I'm going to my car. I'd have had enough of your mouth.
Yeah, I mean, who does? I mean, I know we all Earth, and I guess people are stupid, but, I mean, this ain't even real. It's preseason. I mean, if people getting shot during the preseason, what the hell gonna go on for regular season?
Well, yeah, you know, this is crazy because back when LeBron left Cleveland, I was, you know, shooting pool at a bar, and a bunch of people got into a big old fight over, you know, him, you know, going to Miami or whatever, and then they were arguing about loyalty and all this different kind of stuff. And I just said, wait, not one of y'all idiots are making one dime,
right,
not one penny off of LeBron. So who gives a fuck where he goes?
Right.
Who cares?
Well, I mean, you know that whole, oh, he sold out Cleveland. Like, nobody's ever quit a job and moved on to another one. With no help.
I mean, I didn't hear this much uproar when they, you know, moved the Cleveland Browns, when they just totally renovated the whole thing. And then what, was it like a year or two later came back?
Well, yeah, they got the expansion team. But, I mean, it's still, I mean, they're loving your team. I mean, I love sports. You know, we talk about this. I love sports. I love basketball, football. I mean, I love playing, all that. But the day when I have to shoot somebody because they don't like my team, or I got to get into a fight with somebody over a sport, over a theoretical argument, which team is the best? Yeah. And they wonder why people don't want to go to the games no more.
I thought the people out there, and the no shirt, got their body painted with the wigs on, I thought they were crazy, you know. But this is crazy. This is way across the line.
Well, I'm not against that. You know, I mean, if people want to paint themselves, more power to them.
You seem like you would be the kind of guy that would go out there paint your body.
I'm the exact opposite. I am the exact opposite. And plus, I mean, in the Bay Area, it is way too cold in San Francisco to not have on a shirt. Trust me. People don't know, but San Francisco is maybe the coldest city in California. It's not even close. I mean, it's the frozen tundra, I promise you.
Never been to Ohio,
have you? I've been to Ohio. I've got family in Ohio, but I mean, and I've lived in Indiana, so
okay.
I understand what cold is.
Know what cold is, then? Okay.
Yeah, but
you know, some people say cold, they don't know what cold really is, right. So they go to Ohio, they're like, oh, I got to get up out of here. This is ridiculous.
Yeah. Well, speaking of Ohio, you know your boy Terrell Pryor. He got his walking papers, and so he was allowed to be in the supplemental draft. And ironically, he got picked by the Raiders. Funny, but he got 5-game suspension. You know, it's like they carried over his college suspension into the pros, which I thought was kind of funny because they don't find the coaches who are with cheating programs, why would they find the young men? I mean, how many athletes have we seen that did dirt in college and come to the pros and supposed to be a fresh slate? But I guess hypocrisy rules.
Mm-hmm.
Hypocrisy rules.
You know, it's all the player's fault. You know, it's a blame is always placed on the player.
Right.
And they just a squirrel trying to get a nut, so to speak.
Yeah.
So, but still, the blame is always put on the player.
Yeah. Well, speaking of the squirrel trying to get a nut,
I thought you would catch on to that.
I mean, I guess this is the year of the cutoff penis. That the trucker who got his penis amputated during circumcision,
mm-hmm.
you know, it, he's supposed to get circumcised, a minor operation, and he wakes up, and I guess the doctor had found cancer during the surgery, and
allegedly, right? Yes.
He cuts it off.
I don't know, but I think there was a little bit of penis envy going on there. Because you know how they say, you know, the extra meat, you know, and then you cut it off because, you know, you do the circumcision. But then if it's still, you know, he's still well endowed after that, I guess the doctor got a little bit jealous and said, you know what, I'm sick of this.
I'm not going to go there with it. All I know is that if I go in for a minor procedure, I go to sleep and I have a penis, I damn sure better wake up and have a penis.
I'm just trying to wonder why he's waiting this late in the game to get a circumcision.
Well, supposedly he needed it because he was having some problems, whatnot. He was suffering from cancer, and Dr. Patterson took it off without asking, without giving him a choice, at least.
And, I mean, I can imagine his wife. You know, his wife was there, and the doctor didn't come out and say, you know, we found such and such. That's normal procedure to talk to the family or the next of kin. He said nothing. To be honest with you, I think that he kind of slipped. When he was doing his circumcision, I done messed up. We better just scrap the whole thing.
Yeah.
I'm sorry. Okay. I'm sorry.
I'm just saying, though. I mean, all I know, and he is suing, coincidentally, but
yeah.
Still, I wake up with the penis. That's all I know.
If you don't, somebody in trouble.
Yeah.
There's going to be consequences and repercussions.
Yeah. Anyway, on that note, before we get Mr. Davis on the phone here, we're going to go on a quick break. This is Mad Stally, Slim's Return.
One, two, three.
Money, women, weed, cars, ghetto celebrities, hood movie stars, pack slingers to rap singers, this is who we are. Now listen to the sounds of Mad Stally on. As I carry on the charm of a dawn, walk like the Fonz, cooler than France, in mid-January with my three-piece on. Sailor made, I've been a spade, a sight to see, a walking parade, Ohio I put on. Brilliant, a militant, I get them amped, soon as I step on stage and get a band, followed by that boom, fists in the air, now punch up the room, shake up the building, wake up the children, tell everybody move to the return of the Slim. I, Captain, I'm him. Apology for the delay, salute to where I've been, city to city. Sure, I've just showed stuff the money in the bin. Sheet to sheet, verse after verse, they said there's money in my pen. As the ink keeps spilling, I'm writing out feelings worth about a million. I can barely count my ends. Caught hard times, people dipped out. Now I can barely count my friends. Who cares, I'm still here as the world goes around. On my middle finger, it spins. like a globetrotter. My alma mater was victory. Started off with a lot of L's, now it's nothing but wins. Pocket full of crumbled paper filled with Ohio hymns. My Midwest draw will define the all smiles and grins. Pompous giant, vanity, must I quiet? Just ought to eat good, must I diet? Trust me, must you try it? Bad move and touching a giant, I'm from the southeast side. Where one wrong word could cause a riot. Bunch of revolutionary thugs, when them sirens go off, we go to war with the fuzz. Rebel music out the back of our trunk. For the finale, from Lincoln Way to Tremont, the return of Mad Stallion. The return of Mad Stallion.
Dedicated to my main man, Slim. You know who he is. And on that note, we're going to get my man, Fine Davis, on the call here. And get to talking about all the wonderful things that he is doing and trying to do. Because,
Hello?
Mr. Davis, welcome to Smooth Drama. How you doing?
Good, good. How are you?
I'm good.
Excellent.
Welcome to Smooth Drama, Mr. Davis. This is Ms. 100%.
Pleasure to meet you.
Thank you for coming on the show.
Thank you.
Man, I just want to tell you, man, I want your job.
I hear that a lot.
I mean, I just want to know, how you get involved in the model making, special effects, fabrication business?
You know, I don't know. It's definitely kind of an odd field. You really have to be driven to do it. You have to kind of work up to it. It took a lot of years to get into the position I'm in, you know, to where I could actually make a living.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, you making a living. I mean, just looking at your filmography, Mission Impossible, the Star Wars, War of the Worlds, Terminator, Matrix, Planet of the Apes, Jurassic Park. I'm like looking at the models like, I want to play on that set. I was like 10 again.
Yeah, no, you know, we always say that if they could just take away the budgets and schedules, they could just call it play.
Yeah. Yeah.
I can imagine it takes a tremendous amount of patience to do something just so tedious and detailed. And it's really an art. It's beautiful. I see the movies, but then looking at your portfolio, I was kind of like, wow, this is an art form.
Well, thank you very much. Yeah, it is actually really hard work, and I think that's why people don't end up getting into it. There are a lot of people who kind of dabble and they get into the industry, and it's pretty hardcore. We do a lot of hours.
Yeah. I can imagine. I mean, and after watching the videos, I'm like, oh man, that wasn't a real place. That was like a dollhouse.
Yeah. It's the art of illusion. Yeah, I love it. I love it. I've always loved it since I was a kid, you know, growing up on Star Wars and all those, you know, really great science fiction films that used a lot of miniatures back in the day. And I just got really, really fortunate. I just pushed my career in that direction for, it must have been a decade, you know, until I finally got into it.
Hey, well, I mean, you're doing a good job. I want to ask you, as far as movie sets and all that, which was the most fun and satisfying, and conversely, which was the least satisfying?
You know, I get asked that question frequently, and that's a really, really difficult question to ask because, you know, one of the reasons I love doing this is because I like variety, you know, and every single movie you work on is completely different than the one before. You work with a different team almost every time. You see a lot of the same people again and again, but a lot of times it's a new dynamic between people. And then every director out there is trying to do something new or different.
Mm-hmm.
And because of that, it's a really different experience on each project. But if I had to pick, I'd say, it was always a lot of fun to work with Disney.
Okay.
They just really have their act together, all their ducks in a row, you know. We did Nightmare Before Christmas and James and Giant Peach, which were both.
I love that movie.
You know, those are fun, really, really fun movies. Just, we had a blast doing those. Just loads and loads of detail and a lot of creativity. We were given a lot of creative freedom with the stuff that we did there. That's always really great. You want to feel like you're contributing, you know. And then, of course, Star Wars was a pretty big deal because I grew up watching all those films, and that's kind of what got me into the business. And then to work on those films was just kind of felt like, you know, it brought, you know, things to a close in a way in terms of just reaching that goal, you know.
Well, I know.
Full circle.
Well, yeah, I was going to say, coming full circle, to be a huge fan of something and to go from being a huge fan to someone who is actually working on and a part of something that you're a huge fan of, I know that had to be such a thrill.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. It was, you know, I have to say that was kind of funny. I didn't expect, I thought, boy, I'm going to have to really keep myself emotionally in check because I'd get giddy like a little boy or something when I started working on Star Wars. But it at a certain level, it just felt like any other job. It was great, don't get me wrong, but it felt like just about every other project I'd worked on. It was fun and, you know, hard work and all that. But then being able to work with any of the original trilogy things like R2-D2, things like that, then I'd get really excited.
Wow.
But all
I'm
the new movies.
You talk about it. Now, I wanted to ask, how did you get your start? Because I'm a person who I love graphics, I love animation, and I want to get into that, and I don't have very much training. I'm sure there are people out there like me, and the education is so limited or it's so specific, and it doesn't really, you know, go into what I really want to do. So what advice would you have as far as training and education, and how did you get your start?
Yeah, you know, for me, I just kind of, you know, I started in set construction. And when I did that, I was doing carpentry. I was just doing remodeling in San Francisco when I was younger. And it was okay, but it wasn't really what I wanted to do. I've always been really creative, and I just wanted to be challenged at different levels, you know. And so every time I was between a construction project, I would hit all the set construction companies in San Francisco. At the time, there were 9 of them. There was a really strong and thriving commercials and music video industry in San Francisco. Mm-hmm. So eventually, you know, I hounded them enough times, kind of, you know, in a nice way, of course. You don't want to come across as too much of a fan, oddly, even though I am. You got to be professional. And eventually I got a job at one of those places and I was able to kind of prove my worth, and I ended up getting hired on a 2-week job and staying there for 9 months.
Wow.
And then from there I built a portfolio, and the portfolio is really important. You know, and then after I had a portfolio, it was a lot easier to land jobs at these other studios. And eventually I was working for all 9 of the set construction companies in the Bay Area.
Hmm.
When one of the places was Colossal Pictures. We did a lot of stop motion. We did Pillsbury Doughboy commercials and things like that. And it was a pretty easy segue from that into Nightmare Before Christmas, because Henry Selick, who directed commercials over at Colossal Pictures, went to school with Tim Burton, and he got hired to do Nightmare Before Christmas, and he brought over his whole team, including myself, from Colossal Pictures to work on that feature. So you just kind of, you know, you just work in, you work hard, you get in there at any job, at any level, and you just work hard, and people notice, you know?
Right.
Okay.
Now,
and then it does take years to kind of, you know, you just surround yourself with like-minded people, too. That's a really big part of it.
Okay.
My social life is very much a part of my professional life. There's no differentiation. There's no difference between them, you know?
Right.
Okay.
Now, I know going into that from working for other people, you ventured off. How I met you at Comic-Con, I saw your book, Morav, and after taking it home and reading it, I mean, it's like a modern-day masterpiece. I don't know necessarily if they'd want to do this book. It's so close to reality, it's kind of scary. Talk about Morav and the inspiration behind it.
Yeah. You know, Morav, actually, it was kind of a slow percolation. I've been working on Morav for about 7 years. We just finished the graphic novel last year. And, you know, it started out as I just wanted to see certain types of entertainment fiction that I wasn't seeing. And this went on for years. I really wanted to see something like Morav, and no one was creating it. And I don't know, a light went on at some point, and I said, well, maybe I should do it.
Yeah.
And that's kind of how it started. You know, I'm very fortunate that I'm surrounded by really, really talented and creative friends. And, you know, with the team I was able to put together on this book, it wasn't too difficult. You know, and Morav is, you know, it's basically the really, really gritty, realistic giant robot science fiction that I haven't seen anyone do. You know, some of the Japanese anime comes close, but the robots always seem to shoot lasers out of their eyes, and they're 100 feet tall, and they can fly.
Right.
And I just wanted to see some depiction of what it would really be like to have giant robots.
Yeah.
You know, and how would that affect the world? How would that affect the people around them? You know, and in my book, it's pretty dire. It starts a global arms race that eventually leads to World War III.
Yeah.
Okay.
I mean, that's what I was focused on. I mean, the giant robot aside, I mean, it was like a very, very human story. It seemed like something that we see over and over again. You pit this nation against that nation, you create an incident, and then you sell arms to both.
Yes, that's exactly what happened. You know, it's kind of odd. I don't know if I should feel guilty about this or not, but I really, really enjoy writing this really dark, dark fiction. We're basically creating World War III and the circumstances, you know, that World War III starts with, you know. And, you know, we did, you know, I have to kind of back that up with, you know, we are creating this technology. We're making it as real as possible. For the fans and for myself, of course, I'm one of the fans. And then we're also doing all the politics and things that lead up to World War III and the dynamics of that. But we're really, really careful to kind of make that stuff available. But the stories really are character driven.
Right. Well,
we really want to make it about the people. Right. We just really careful to create a world that's realistic to put these people in.
Right. Well, that's what drew me in. Also, we talk about these small nations who are trying to be progressive and trying to be forward thinking, but they're caught up in the political machine. Bigger nations trying to take advantage of smaller nations, as we always see. And then the backdrop is you go into the human, the military officers and the politics behind why we make war and why we don't support such and such, because there's an ulterior motive. I mean, the story behind the story was fascinating to me. Like, you can see the conspiracy slowly churning out.
We try to draw from reality as much as possible. The reality of our world is, every nation in the world has had to decide at some point whether to prop up the military-industrial complex since World War II, because the economy would collapse if they didn't.
Mm.
Every president of the United States has had to do that. So, like it or not, this is just kind of the world we're in. I don't know if it's always going to be that way, but that's certainly the way it is now.
Well, I know you talked about World War III. Now, are you talking about a follow-up to Morab where it goes into World War III? I mean, is there a follow-up book, animation, movie in the works?
Yeah, we've got a lot in the works. I have enough chronology here to do a TV series. Originally, that's what I was pitching it for. And I met a good friend of mine, Zachary Sherman, who writes comic books, that wrote the MORAV History of Robotic Warfare comic, and did a spectacular job. Eventually, what we want to do is we want to move into a second graphic novel that follows the characters from the graphic novel, into World War III. And then we're also currently working on a live-action webisode series that follows a giant robot crew on different deployments around the world. So it's different characters than the books. But we wanted to kind of take a different perspective on the situation and just really examine the human condition when you stick, five or six guys in a giant robot with a reporter and send them out into these really dangerous situations,
Yeah, I look forward to that. Do you have a timetable on when you'd be rolling this out?
Well, we've built a full-scale giant robot interior out by my studio. And then we've also built a 24th scale version of the Gen 1, which is the giant combat robot. And it's the first one that they manufacture at SphereCorp. That's the company that makes all the robots. And then we've also made a 5-foot-tall version of that robot. We've been working on it for about a year. We've got a lot of great progress. If you want to follow it on Facebook, you can friend me or go onto the Facebook MORAV page. There's a lot of behind-the-scenes stuff there. Our goal is to shoot in the fall. We're actually going to start rolling out a Kickstarter campaign to raise money to try to make sure that happens, because we're right on the ragged edge right now.
Right.
It's very exciting. I mean, we're very, very close. We just need that little push just to get us the rest of the way. And once we have the team assembled and we do our first webisode, I think it's going to be rather easy to keep those going.
Yeah, I don't anticipate you'll have a problem with interest whatsoever. I mean, it's a compelling story.
Now, for the book that's already out, do you already have anything on the web, like a web series or a webisode, anything like that right now for that book, or is that not going to happen, or...
Well, we have the book. I'm sorry, go ahead.
I was going to say, because it's really interesting to me. I'm not a comic book girl or anything like that, but working with Dick, he's slowly turning me into one. So, and he always has very interesting people on, like yourself. So this is really, especially because of the story, because of the plot, is very interesting to me, so I wanted to, kind of take a look at it,
Yeah, you can actually go to amusedom.com. That's amusedom.com, I think.
Okay.
I should have prepared for that one. Anyway, but amusedom.com, you can Google it, and they'll correct my spelling. I just actually rolled out the book as a digital version on that website.
Okay.
So you can either read it in single issues or the entire graphic novel. And then if you go to morav.net, you can kind of follow what we're working on for the entire project, and that's where we'll be putting up all the political stuff and the technical specifications for the robot, because we're really, really digging in deep to that stuff right now. Because we're building the set, we had to decide what every switch, knob, and dial does. Mm. And we're really careful to make it all as realistic as possible. So you'll be able to see that online as well.
Yeah, I mean, I know we're both in the Bay Area now, so I may have to stalk you so I can take a sneak peek at this set.
Oh, absolutely. You should come by.
You don't have to ask me twice. Oh, I'm ready to work. You don't have to ask me twice.
Well, I don't want to work. I just want to play with the 5-foot-tall robot because he's just about as tall as I am. I'm only 5'3", so I kind of want to play with the robot.
You can climb right inside.
Yeah, I would love to do that. Really?
No, I mean, not only did you do more of, I saw your short feature film, The Subject.
Oh yeah. Yeah, The Subject was fun. You know, that was for when I was working for Industrial Light Magic, they had a little thing called the Backyard Film Festival.
Uh-huh.
And we were tasked with doing a movie for $50. We couldn't use computer graphics, and we had to complete it in a very short amount of time, of course, while we were working full time. So I shot that on, I think it was like 3 lunch breaks and 1 night after work.
Wow.
And I wasn't originally going to do it because I was so busy, but I get a little excited about things, as you can tell. And I just I was driving to work, and I had an idea for a story, and I just kind of elaborated on it, you know, during my very boring 45-minute drive. And by the time I got to work, I decided I had to do it.
I thought it was funny, entertaining, and it made me double take on going to sleep in the whole alien abduction probing.
Yeah, that was a lot of fun.
All right, so now we talk about your Morav and what's next on that agenda. You got any other irons in the fire?
Oh, absolutely. Basically, I run a design and fabrication studio in West Marin. And one of the things that we just started producing is an educational series. We have our first DVD coming out this year called An Introduction to Professional Model Making with me. You know, basically I wanted to make sure that we preserve the art that we create. There's a lot of people in our industry retiring. There's a lot of miniature effects houses closing down. As films are done more and more with computer effects, there's fewer and fewer people actually carrying on the trade of professional model making.
Right.
For film specifically, it's kind of a different mentality than a lot of model making because, you know, a hobbyist and a professional both take pride in how much time they spend on a model, but the measurement is done in reverse directions because the professional takes pride in how little time they spend on a model, and the hobbyist takes pride in how many years they spend on a model, you know?
Yeah.
So the DVD is really just kind of outlining all the kind of cool tricks that we use to make it look like you spent a year on a model when you've actually only spent a week.
Hmm.
Oh, okay.
So, yeah, it's going to be pretty fun. Actually, I build a spaceship. And I show how to build a spaceship, and I basically did it in 40 hours.
Well, fine. Hold on. We have a call. Caller, welcome. You're on the air. Welcome to Smooth Drama.
Hi, is this me?
Yes, it's you.
Hi. Fawn knows me as Buzz Lightyear.
Oh, right on. It's Matt.
How you doing?
Awesome.
I never got to work with Fawn or anybody at Industrial Light and Magic, but I'm so glad your DVDs are coming out because I want to be able to know better techniques and model making. And I miss you. I appreciate everything you're doing. Morav is just getting more and more exciting to me. You're gonna put out a DVD that's gonna be so special for everybody that even my nephew and my daughter, they entered model competitions and they're still building models. And I keep telling them, you know, you got to meet these guys, you got to meet those guys. And yes, the small shops are closing down, and I'm out of work with something like that. But your DVDs are going to be such a great addition to my collection and my kids' collection and future model builders. And I want to be able to come up and see your stuff. So I'll be visiting you soon, but I just want to call and say that this is awesome to hear you online, and this is so awesome. I'm following you on Facebook too, and it's incredible to see everything that's being built.
Well, great, thank you so much. You know, I can't do it without you guys, so this is awesome. You know, buy two of the DVDs.
No, we will. We'll give them as a Christmas gift to everybody.
Yeah, that's one of the main things. It's like, it's very sad to watch all these shops close, and it's sad to hear, you know, you, Matt, being out of work, and I know a lot of out-of-work model makers, very talented people, and I think, you know, there's just, you know, in a way, it's our own fault. We've fallen asleep at the wheel. We haven't been out there kind of really getting people pumped up and excited about model making. We haven't been sharing any of these secrets with people, so we're, you know, we're like bad magicians. We're going to take this stuff to the grave if we're not careful.
Well,
and I always wanted to learn from the masters, but the masters had their own techniques that they didn't want to share with the young guys. So I can understand that too. But your DVDs are going to be excellent. I can't wait.
Well, thanks. Thank you very much.
All right. Thank you, Tom.
All right. Bye-bye.
And you can purchase the DVD right online. Go right to the website and purchase it there.
Yeah, I'll be doing an announcement as soon as I find out exactly how this is going to work out. You know, you guys are the first to hear it. So this is the premiere announcement for the DVD. I haven't. We're just putting the finishing touches on it right now.
Okay.
I know that they'll be selling at micromark.com, and they'll also be selling on amazon.com a little later this year, hopefully before the holiday season.
Well, I'm affiliated with a couple of schools, elementary schools, so I'm hoping that I can solicit you to come talk to a whole bunch of elementary kids about the beauty of model making. So maybe.
Yeah, I would love to. I'd love to. Anyone who's got you know, appearances or lectures or anything like that, I've been doing a lot more of that lately because I'm kind of on a personal mission to save practical model making. You know, I think that, you know, a lot of people just don't know that we're here. A lot of people don't know how many miniatures are still being used in film. And a lot of people don't know how economical it can be to do miniatures in the way we used to do miniatures. You know, independent filmmakers could do a lot with what we have to offer.
Yeah.
You know, one of the things I always say is if you don't have enough money for a computer graphics shot, it's not going to look very good. But you can do quite a bit with low budget, you know, practical effects. And I would argue that cheap practical effects will always look better than cheap CG effects.
Oh, beyond a shadow of a doubt.
You know, they just kind of take you out of the movie. That's like my least favorite. That's one of the reasons I'm on a mission, because I think the hybrid of computer effects mixed with practical visual effects is really the secret to really good-looking films. You know, I think that it's kind of almost an unfair comparison to say, hey, should we do a practical shot here or should we do computer graphics? I think, you know, the comparison should actually be, should we do live action or should we do practical? Because you get all the same things from a, you know, practical miniature that you would from a live action shot, interaction with light and texture and, you know, it looks real because it's real.
Right.
With computer graphics, not saying you can't do it, but you have to work really hard to get, you know, computer graphics to not look like computer graphics. It takes a decent amount of money to do that and a decent amount of time. And sometimes you just don't have that.
Yeah.
You know.
Well, so that's why they have these million-dollar budgets, multi-million-dollar budgets on these films just trying to get the CGI right when they can just see you, huh?
Well, and sometimes they still don't get it right. You know, if you look at, like, I think Weta is the biggest effects shop in the world right now. They've even surpassed Industrial Light and Magic. And they use miniatures like crazy. They still have a model shop. And I think that's kind of one of the reasons their stuff looks so good.
Well, and I think it goes back to what you were talking about, bad magicians, where people aren't passing it on. I don't think that people understand how much the miniatures are used in films, whatnot. And like you're talking to independent filmmakers, I think if they knew or had more access to guys like yourself, they probably would use you more.
Yeah, I think that's where I say we've kind of done this to ourselves, you know, by keeping all this information so exclusive. You know, you really need all different levels of model shops and model makers to have a thriving industry. And if a filmmaker goes out there and all that is accessible to him or her is computer visual effects houses, then they're not really going to even consider miniatures.
Right.
You know, and I think part of it is the schools, and this is why I'm really kind of going after education, because if you go to a filmmaking school, you know, they've kind of lost the art of visual effects in terms of, you know, just doing in-camera effects. You just don't really see people doing that anymore, you know, forced perspectives and things like that, you know, with a miniature foreground element. There's a lot of these tricks, if they knew them, they would be a lot easier and a lot more economical if they were taught these tricks, but they're not. You know, they're all learning on computers, and as all the people in the industry are learning on computers, you know, the new generation coming in, they're not going to consider miniatures. They're not going to consider a creature as a puppet, you know.
Right. Well,
if you go back and rewatch a movie like Galaxy Quest, it is just phenomenal. I just watched that recently on Blu-ray, and the combination of miniatures and practical in that film are just really, really well balanced, and it looks really good.
Yeah,
and then, you know, I'll go see some of the newer movies that are out today. I won't name anything by name because I have friends that worked on all of them. But every once in a while, you know the shot. You know, everyone out there listening knows that shot you see in a film, and you're like, oh, man, that looks horrible. And then you're not involved in the characters anymore. You're not involved in the story anymore. Now you're thinking about this kind of blurry, weird-looking thing on the screen that's supposed to represent something real, and it just doesn't.
Right.
You know, I can't stand being taken out of a movie. I really do want to be immersed in it, you know?
Right. Well, I mean,
now, I have one last question for you. Now, I read that you did some work for the Transformers movie, but you couldn't include it in your portfolio until after the DVD comes out. But can you just talk briefly about the work that you did for that movie?
Yeah, that was pretty brief amount of work, so I can speak very briefly about it. Yes. The thing that we do for a lot of films these days, and this was done over at Kerner Optical in San Rafael. It's the old ILM model shop. They are still around. They're not owned by Lucasfilm anymore. They're just kind of struggling along there. But what their primary focus has been the last few years is destruction. So, you know, that is something that's really – it's not impossible in computers. Nothing is impossible in computers. But it is very, very difficult to create that kind of random physics of an explosion or a destruction of a big building or something like that. So all I was doing over there for that film was heading up the destruction inside the building that gets torn apart by the snake robot.
Okay, okay.
In Chicago. It eventually breaks the building in half.
Yeah.
And some of the falling debris and breaking glass and, the robot busting through the floor, a lot of that stuff can be done in miniature.
All right.
Wow.
Well, so I have a personal request for you. I know you got a whole lot of stuff on your plate, but I'm still waiting to see you do the Godzilla movie.
You know, I would love to do a Godzilla movie. That's another one of those ones that I grew up on.
Yes.
And I'm in my office right now looking at my collection of Godzilla figures on the shelf there.
Oh, God.
You know, it's funny. I actually, it's I don't know how good it is for my career, but I really take all the projects on really big films as well as little independent films and low-budget films, whatever. I really just – I love storytelling, and I don't think it requires necessarily a $100 million to tell a good story.
Right.
And to create something interesting and fun. The Godzilla movies were a perfect example of that. They were pretty low-budge, and it was clearly a guy in a suit. But the creature design – was done well enough to where you identified with this, you know, giant lizard.
Right.
You know, that's real artistry, you know, to be able to overcome low budgets and create something that people can really latch onto and love the way people love the Godzilla films. I think that's commendable, you know.
Yeah.
I would love to do a Godzilla movie. I'm ready.
I keep my Godzilla with me at all time also.
Awesome.
That was the reason why I said, oh, God, I knew that was coming. He's a Godzilla fan as well.
Yeah.
Huge Godzilla fan.
Yeah, well, you know, if you like miniatures, Godzilla movies are like, you know, you can't not end up watching a lot of those.
Now, before you go, tell the people where they can find you and your awesome creation if they want to catch up to you and learn more about what you do.
There's a lot of places. I'm all over the web. if you want to learn more about MoRav, we have a MoRav Facebook page, and we have www.morav.net. I also have my website for my fabrication and design studio is foncocreative.net. If you want to friend me on Facebook, you can see all the kind of interesting projects I get involved with. That's just Fawn Davis, spelled F-O-N, D-A-V-I-S. I'm on Facebook as well. And then my book is on amusedom.com. And I think that covers it. You know, and with any luck, you'll be hearing about a MoRav feature film called MoRav Escalation as well.
I told you, man, I'm stalking you.
Well, I'm easy to stalk.
I'll be just a guy hanging out in the corner telling, don't arrest me. I'm just watching. I won't break nothing.
Awesome.
Well, I want to thank you for coming on the show, man. And, I mean, I learned a lot.
Yeah, thank you for having me. It was a blast.
And hopefully I can get you to come out to the school and impart some of your wizardry to the loved ones and inspire somebody to grow up and be like you.
I've done the schools, I've done the conventions. I love doing all that. Any time I can get out there and talk, I like to talk. And I love talking about my work, so it kind of works out for everybody.
All right, well, I'll be talking to you. And
all right.
Thank you for coming on, and you take care.
Yeah, great talking with you guys. Thank you for having me on the show.
All right.
All right, have a good night.
You too, good night.
All right, that was Fawn Davis, special effects model maker extraordinaire.
I love his excitement, his enthusiasm.
Yeah, he does a lot of exciting things, man. I mean, it's like, looking at the stuff that he had done, I'm like, I like I said, I was 10. I was 10 all over again. we're going to go on a quick station identification break, and me and Miss 100 will be right back.
Together you got smooth drummer, smooth drummer.
All right, welcome back to Smooth Drama. Oh, excitement is in the air. Well, something that's not that exciting, though. You know how we've had these incidents with the cops violating people's civil rights, and it seems like it's turning the other way where it used to be we kind of, well, maybe we haven't had a handle on it.
Mm-hmm.
But it seems like it's turning where the cops are violating our rights and there's no recourse for us. I mean, I'm reading about a case where a guy went to jail 15 years in prison for taping the cops because they've enacted some eavesdropping laws now. Now, you imagine something along those lines where I see the cops doing something and I get in trouble for it. I mean, case in point, they found that in my favorite state of Florida, by the way, that the cops had shot into a car over 100 bullets. And what they did, the witnesses, they came by and took all the cell phones and recording devices and smashed them, confiscated them, whatnot. Only one guy was smart enough to take his SIM card out, and he held it in his mouth, and he ended up selling it to CNN. And, of course, the cops, they had to explain why they said nothing happened, but it ended up showing on the tape that they actually had did that.
Mm-hmm.
Now, I mean, you
just said a whole bunch of stuff. Wow. First of all, wow. Over 100 bullets?
Over 100.
And, oh, it's so, okay, we didn't do anything, so...
Yeah, they
even without video footage, someone has to explain what happened. And I don't see how saying nothing happened or, you know, just making up a lie could pass. So that's just blatant, you know, like you said, doing things and getting away with it, you know, and then taking the phones and smashing them. How is that eavesdropping? Don't we have rights?
Well, you have the right to do everything but record the police breaking the law. Because if you are witness to the cops breaking the law, you have broken the law.
So now we just look the other way and allow cops to just basically do whatever they want. And like you said, get away with it and have no consequences for their actions.
That's pretty much it. And, you know, the funny thing about it is we had Go Topless just this past week, and I was at the rally. And, you know, it's a huge amount of people at the rally. You know,
okay.
Obviously it's women with no shirts on.
Mm-hmm.
So everyone is there, they're hyped up. Oh, it's Go Topless. And they're you know, women with the breasts out. And it seemed like people missed the point. That
the whole point
about, it wasn't about titties. It was, you know, it's about the freedom, the rights. And it's like people were missing that point of the rally. And I think people will miss that point of this also, that it's about the rights.
Right.
Period. You have the right to report a wrong, just like women should have the right to do the same thing as men. But unfortunately, we are not seeing that. And I'm hoping that one of these days we can go past the physical and embrace the mental aspect of freedom just once, maybe twice.
Right. Freedom shouldn't be subjective, you know.
Right.
It just shouldn't be, you know. We all have the same rights, but for some reason it's one part of society has to abide by the laws of the land, whereas the other part of society, they can do whatever they want and get away with it. And nobody says anything about it. And until we as a people come together and not just speak up about it, but do something about it, and, you know, united we stand, divided we fall, stop bickering and arguing with each other over petty little differences and actually on what's going on.
All right. And on that note, we're going to leave off. I want to thank Fawn Davis for coming on the show. I want to thank Ms. 100% for being the great co-host that you are. I'm Dick Hugger, a.k.a. After N-Word, Smooth Drama. We out. Peace.
He is the host with the most, and he's rocking coast to coast, smooth. She is the lady with her hands.
Where in the hell did you get your news from?
Drama.
Together you got
smooth drama. Smooth.